Hoops through life.
Welcome to another episode of Hoops Through Life, a podcast where we discuss the women's basketball collegiate recruiting process and transition from high school to college. I'm your host, Elizabeth Bierman. Today, our guest is a special one for me because she coached me for 1 year during my college career, Coach Stephanie Del Priore. Coach Steph played for 4 years at Marist, tallying over 1,000 points during her career, and in her senior season, she led her team to its program's first ever NCAA Division I appearance. Following her time at Marist, Coach Steph played professionally in Spain for 1 year, and in 2006, she started her coaching career as an assistant at Caldwell College. From 2008 to 2010, she was an assistant at Stevens Institute of Technology, where she helped the Ducks to an Empire 8 championship and advancing to the second round of the NCAA Division III tournament. From 2010 to 2013, she became the head coach at the University of Bridgeport. Then from 2013 to 2015, Coach Steph was the top assistant at Seton Hall. And from 2015 to 2019, she was the head coach at LIU Brooklyn, where she coached multiple all-conference players, including LIU Brooklyn's first ECAC Rookie of the Year. In 2019, Coach Steph found her current home at East Stroudsburg, where she is in her fourth season as the head women's basketball coach. Whew, Coach, that felt like a pretty long list. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. I was like, this is going to keep going, huh?
Wow. I practiced it and I timed it and I was like, man, that is a pretty long intro. So hopefully awesome. We have time for other things. But I know, like, given all of your experience, I'm really excited to just jump right in and talk about the recruiting process. So what is the first thing you notice about a student athlete? Like, what draws you in?
Honestly, if it's like live basketball game, the first thing we notice is the most vocal player is usually the one that catches our eye first, because that's usually the player that's obviously the most vocal. So they're talking the most, but they're doing the most, like offensively, defensively. So we tend to keep an eye on somebody that constantly communicates and like is gathering their team and doing all of those things that really don't show up on the stats, because assuming if they're the most vocal and the most active, they're probably doing some other good things too.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm sure that includes like on the court and off the court as well. Or like when they're sitting
on the bench. When a player subs out. Yeah. When a player subs out, you know, I'm like, if they're quiet or, you know, complaining about something, we tend to not really watch them. But if they're kind of standing and clapping and cheering on their teammate and calling out the screens or whatever it is from the bench, we're like, yes, this is definitely a good piece to the puzzle that we're looking for always.
Yeah, the energy is always a great thing to have. Is there anything that sticks out to you, maybe not like first, but once you get to know them off the court?
One of the biggest things is if they talk a lot about their family. I like when we're recruiting a player and they're not just talking about, you know, basketball all the time. If they're talking about their family and how close they are with them, because then they understand a family dynamic and then they understand what it takes to actually like be on a team through thick and thin. So that's something that's really big for us outside of academics and recruiting higher academic players, which we tend to do. Definitely if somebody has an active family that's involved and, you know, they're like, they're at all of our games or, you know, they're going to always be following us. That's something that's huge for us.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I don't know if a coach has so explicitly said that, any of the coaches I've interviewed before, because I mean, a team is a family, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. And you don't want, especially if you're someone who has a lot of energy, you don't kind of want them to go rogue. You want them to be for the team. So
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, honestly, in the recruiting process, outside of just recruiting the player, like we are recruiting their family. I mean, I have families, you know, we play East and West in Pennsylvania right now. We have families driving 6 hours to watch our games. So it's nice to have that. And it's nice to look in the stands and for the girls to see that, because whether we're winning or losing, it's always nice to see your mom or your dad or your grandparents or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. It's nice to see people supporting you in the middle of a snowstorm 6 hours away when things aren't going your way. And when things are going your way, it's nice to have like a hug from that person. So we tend to do our recruiting visits with the whole family. I literally am like, bring everyone that's going to be involved in this process, because they need to, one, get to know me and understand the balance that we're going to keep between family and then the family that we have on our team.
So what is like the most amount of family members you've ever had on a visit then?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, a lot. Oh my gosh. With siblings, a grandparent, and a significant other, probably like eight,
I
which is
just imagine, yeah,
ridiculous.
I just imagine you taking like around people around campus and people like hopping on, like,
Literally.
oh, is a tour happening right now?
Yes. Yes, it's happened. I'm like, just jump on. And honestly, like, my family post game is always in my office. So it's my, everybody, my mom, my sister, my brother-in-law, my niece, like everybody's in my office post game, my cousins, my friends. So then they are like, it's the same thing. Like if I was going on a recruiting visit right now, I would bring my whole family too. So we try to see the family dynamic as much as possible.
Oh, that's awesome. So on visits and things like that, I guess, what are those things that you're looking for from a student athlete and even their family in terms of how they show up, what questions they ask, and all of that?
Honestly, if they are allowed to talk, if they talk instead of their parents talking for them, that's huge because we actually discuss that after the meeting. If they come prepared with questions, if they're presentable, like if they didn't just roll out of bed and sleep the whole car ride, which a lot of them sleep the car ride, but like then they're like ready to be involved. If they have questions that aren't generic, more questions geared towards the school or what they've done research on, or if they've remembered the conversations that we've had previously, like on the phone, if they bring that up, that's always good. Someone that's not just there for the visit, or someone that's not just there because their family made them go there. And then as far as the things that we notice with the family is, allowing their child to speak is always good. And then asking the right, parent questions. And I always laugh because the parent questions are, the school safety questions, proximity to home, the furthest game we go to, how does a meal plan work? Like the things that you want your parents to worry about you for are the questions I love hearing. Because literally, you obviously went through my resume. I've had a few different jobs. My mom is always asking those questions. My mom at this point of 41 years old is like, is it a safe place for you to be? I'm like, yes, they have security on campus.
So
Like,
does she
do you
come
get a
with
meal plan with the
you?
job?
Does she come with you on the interviews to make sure that those questions are asked?
She would love to. She would actually love
Yeah,
to. Yeah.
that's
But, just really the involvement. And I love seeing the excitement in parents. And we tend to not offer a scholarship until we're in person if we can, just because it's awesome to do it in person, see a genuine reaction, and then come off of the high of the offer and then see the questions that follow. I think on the phone, it kind of gets run over a little bit and you don't really get to be as involved as you would like. And I think it is a family thing, offering somebody a scholarship. They're not driving themselves all these AAU tournaments. They're not paying for their AAU. The scholarship is literally because of all the stuff their parents did. So I like to do that in person. And then the reactions are always really fun. I always cry. So
Every time.
there's that, pretty much. Because the moms start crying or the dads start crying. And then I'm like, oh my God, I love you guys. Please come here. So.
I guess if you're offering somebody, you would definitely feel that type of interest in like their family and everything. So that makes sense that you would get a little bit emotional if they got emotional. And I know we're kind of jumping ahead. It's okay. We can jump around, do whatever we want. But you mentioned scholarships, so I want to talk a little bit about that too. What's something about like a scholarship that a student athlete might not know or might not be aware of?
That they're not automatically renewed each year. I think we still have to make that point, and I'm very diligent with making that point. It's not a 4-year scholarship, though people think they know it, and people tell them that it has to come really more with an explanation of the reasonings why, and if whether it's an NCAA violation or whatever it might be. Academically ineligible, it that you don't just get it the following year. So that's definitely something that we have to discuss. And then the other thing at Division II is not all schools are fully funded. So my scholarships tend to not always be a full 100%, every single thing is covered. So we then have to explain the money side of things.
Okay. And then with the idea or the fact that you're not fully funded, is there any room for negotiation on the student athlete's part, or is it more so this is kind of what we got and that's the best we can do?
The easiest way that to put it is we give them a number. This is what we have in our budget. This is what we could afford. Academically, this is what you're going to get. This is what you're going to be left with to pay. I always make the promise that by their senior year, they'll owe nothing. So I try to increase them every year. But I like wholeheartedly explain, like, if you really want to come here, if like this is your dream school and the reason you're not coming is because of money, like you have to tell me that, because I will do whatever I can, whether it's calling donors, trying to get an increase, whatever, talking to admissions about other scholarships they could apply for. That's something we always do. And I've had a few players be like, you know, listen, like this is what we're getting financial aid wise. It's going to be short a little bit. My parents are going to try to work on it. And I've always been able to either find the money within our budget or raise the money somehow and then use it from that type of fund. But I never want somebody to not come to play for us because of money. Because I was somebody that did, I was blessed enough to have a full scholarship, but like I know my parents didn't have the money to send me to college.
Yeah. And I mean, when you said that, I just imagine you like running around just all the
Yes.
time, just trying to figure out how you can make the situations work, which is like sounds like a lot on your end.
Yeah. It doesn't happen often, but it happens enough where, you know, I'm like, hey, I can give you this much money and I know it's not going to be enough, but we have a year until you come here. So if you're not looking to make your decision right now, give me some time because I can increase this at any point. Also, I don't know if somebody's going to be leaving my team by the end of the year, opening up more money. So I give them the most that I usually offer like the most that I possibly can at that given moment and then try to give more.
So then, and we don't have to get, I mean, this is like specific to your program, but I'm just curious. So I'm asking, but you don't have to answer it. So the way that your scholarships work, I just imagine a pot, right? And you can dole out the pot however you want to dole it out. And then, so when you're offering kids, are you like, okay, we have like five spots to fill in this class, and we're going to offer each one this amount? Or is it more like, oh, this is the kid we're interested in, we have five spots, but I'm really interested in this one, this is our first offer, I'm going to offer them a little bit more, and it kind of goes down. Does that question make sense? Like, how does that work
Yeah,
for you?
absolutely. So it is. It's a big pot of money. I have a lump sum of money and it's broken down into literally just dollar amount. And I pull from it and we offer according to want and need and immediate impact. So if I think a player is going to be like immediately impacting us, if it's a transfer, they're probably going to get offered more because of what the value that they're going to bring to our team. Yeah, so not everybody's really getting an even amount, but everybody's getting something.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And logically, I think that's, or I guess people have different ways of doing it. I think some may offer like first year's this much, and then it kind of goes up and depending, and it's more like equal, but that makes sense to me the way you do it. And so I'm a part of a bunch of like Facebook groups about like recruiting and things like that. And the one thing I see parents constantly talking about now is like the transfer portal. Can you speak? Yeah, you just sighed. Can you speak to the impact that the transfer portal has on you and your program or programs you've been a part of?
I think it just changed the recruiting game completely. I've used the portal. I've loved being able to use it. I've been able to have a few transfers come in, and immediately impact our program. Or just whether it's on or off the court, whether they're impacting academically, all of our transfers have done a great job impacting our program. So we've utilized it to bring the right, like I said, piece to the puzzle, not just like this is the best Division I player ever. We need to have her. Like, is it a fit? Like, is this going to work? So it's more like, let's do our research on this person. Why are they leaving? Let's talk to their coach or let's figure out some background. Two transfers that I had last year played for me at LIU and then graduated. And reached out. And when it's funny, when they reached out, I was like, yeah, I'll help you find a school. And they were like, can we come to you? And I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. But I really was like genuinely like, this is really hard to go in the portal. Cause my point is it's hard to go in the portal and then like not have any direction. So I was trying to help them. And then ultimately like they came to play for me, but it's tough. I mean, everybody says like it's like the wild, wild west, right? Like you could just put your name in. You don't have to tell your coach. You just have to tell compliance and then it's on from there. But like I said, we've utilized it. I haven't had very many kids go in at all. But I know it's changed the game completely because if you don't like where you're at, or you're not happy where you're at, or if it's just not a fit, you can immediately go in the portal. And a lot of times kids just stay there, they don't go anywhere. So there's no guarantee that just because you're going in the portal, you're going to go somewhere. And there's no guarantee that you're going to go where you think you're going to go.
I don't, maybe I should look this up now that I think about it, but I don't know the stats of, and I don't know if you know the stats of like the percentage of kids who are in the portal and actually don't find a place to play.
Somebody tweeted it in the beginning of the year, and our men's coach and I were speaking about it. And I don't remember the number, but it's like a staggering number of people that are were just in there and didn't go anywhere, or didn't go anywhere that needed them to be in the portal. Like they, you know what I mean? Like they went like NAIA or JUCO or something.
So would you, if you remember, it's okay if you don't, it, like above or below 50%, don't go anywhere.
I really don't remember.
Okay, that's
I
okay.
don't know. It, there was
We
just so
don't.
many people in the portal that I was like, I can't believe this. Like one of the jobs that I've given myself and my assistant is we check every morning and then she'll check like at night. And half the time it's not even for kids. I just want to see who's going in. I'm loving it. I'm like, this is incredible. It's like a reality show. I'm like, no way this kid's in. You know? It's nuts.
Would you say, do you think it impacts the higher levels more than lower levels in terms of like Division One to Division Three?
I do think it impacts the higher levels because now NIL, everybody's getting paid. But it's the impact because, you know, I'm going to leave this school because of whatever reason and then go to this school for whatever reason. But that other school might be giving you more money. Like that's the added reason sometimes, not all the time. Because honestly, sometimes people just aren't happy. And like, I would never want a player to stay if they're not happy. So I understand it. But I think the way it affects the lower levels is their lower level, our best players are going in because they want to go to the next level.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
So that's where our impact comes in.
I interviewed somebody else, and a comment that they made was they don't think, or in their opinion, it seemed as if now student athletes aren't giving their institution a chance. It's like at the first sign of some sort of discomfort or something, they're just leaving instead of just trying to figure out how to make that situation work, especially since they did all of this vetting in the beginning to find out that that was a school that they wanted to go to. And that this conversation just makes me think of that. And you don't have to comment to that if you don't want to, but that to me was like, yeah, I think so. Because if I think about like myself when I was 18 to 22, it's like you don't really know what's happening, or I didn't really know what was happening or what was
No.
going on. So it's just like, how could I make that type of a decision if, about happiness and things like that? But yeah.
No, I mean, I totally agree. It's tough. I mean, first sign of adversity, there are some people that are like, I'm leaving, right? And what's the reality in that? Like, we lost last night. I didn't quit. Like, I have to go to practice today, right? There's no reality in leaving for that reason because adversity or something didn't go the way you wanted it to go. But I have noticed that. And then what comes along with that exact comment is you didn't give it enough time to build a relationship. Like it takes a year, like it takes a really long time to build a relationship. And as active as we try to be with our players and as active as we are in the recruiting process and their families, one season is not enough. Like I would love to say after 1 year, I know my players inside and out. I probably don't know all 15 of them after 1 year inside and out. I try, I would love to, but it's impossible, right? Just like they're not going to know me after 1 year. You know, you have to build a relationship. So I think that that's taking away from the value in that as well.
When I was coaching at Shenandoah, like I know that my relationships with the juniors and seniors were drastically different than like the first years and the sophomores. So I completely agree with that too. But I think the adversity thing also comes back to something you said about how you try to interact with the kids during the recruiting process is like family. So if they're really in touch with their family and they're interested in, not interested in, but if they're really in touch with their family, I feel like they have supports to lean on during that adversity, and they might tend to lean on you and the team more because that's like their new family kind of thing. So I think that is a smart thing for you to look for when you're in the recruiting process. But as you're doing that process, like what do you view as your role and what do you view as the student athlete's role in the recruiting
In the
process?
recruiting process, I think my role is just to diligently do my job, make sure I know what we're looking for, and not get distracted by. But the other kid on their team is like really, really good, but might have a couple things that we don't need or a couple things that don't fit our program. So I think just to make sure I'm diligently doing my job. And honestly, I think their role is to actively engage with us during the recruiting process and understand we're trying to build a relationship so you don't leave ultimately. And my ultimate goal, right, is to make sure, and I tell them this, is to make sure you graduate in 4 years and you're a functioning human in society. Like you're going to be a better person when you leave here. So like, let's work on that. But we just really try to, like you said, vet before. Like we really try to do that because this is our family. Like we're together all the time. Like more than my own family, I'm with my players and they are with me. So we just really try to diligently learn as much as we possibly can about them and try to give them as much information about us and our players. And we try to get them to campus as much as possible, meet with our players as much as possible, and try to, when they visit, give them like a day in the life of how, you know, we do have 6 a.m. workouts and then you have film and then you have class and let's get a snack. You know, like we try to show them that and see if it's something that they could do. So I know I keep saying this word diligently, but it's, I have a new assistant and this is one of the things I told her when she started this year. I was like, we have to diligently do our job in recruiting. And it's not just she's a scorer or she's the best rebounder I saw. There's so much more to it. And we let the players, the recruits know that as well.
And okay, so that makes sense. I just imagine, like, on the whiteboard in your office, it just has the word diligently. So
Literally, it's like,
that.
please. Because I think this is like my 17th year coaching. And I'm like, you know, we've done pretty good with not having transfers in the last 5 years that we've been here. Under a handful. I don't, maybe one or two, but and it's, there's reasons behind that, right? So we have to make sure we're continuing to do that. And are we always getting like the best player to ever play in the state of Pennsylvania? No, but we're getting a really good student athlete that's going to help us build something and then in 4 years be like a great person like in the world. So that's one of the things we try to like work on.
And you said the role of the student athlete would be to actively communicate and understand that you're trying to build a relationship. I guess what does that look like in your eyes? Like, what do they need to be doing?
The biggest thing is communicating. Like, I don't need them to call me every day. I always tell my recruits, if you need a coach that's going to call you every single day, this isn't going to work for you. Because I'm not going to do that. Because that's, you're a 16, 17-year-old kid and you don't know what you want to wear to school. And you don't need me calling you every day and harassing you about where you want to go for the next 4 years. So, ones that communicate when prompted, like, hi, how are you? And ones that communicate like their life, like, coach, I had like a really big win last night. Or coach, that is my favorite. We have prom. Do you want to see my dress? Yes. I would love to see your prom dress. Are you kidding me? Like, I love that. What does that communicate about like life events and not just how many points they had or how many rebounds they had? You know, I had one, some kids or one kid was like, I can't wait for this weekend. And I'm like, awesome. Like, have a great weekend. Why? She's like, my grandmother has a pool. I'm like, have the best weekend ever. You know, like, it's so like any type of communication like that where they're not, where they're looking at me as a human and not just like this crazy coach that's going to be yelling for the next 4 years. And then also communicating their schedule, I think, is huge. Letting us know when their games are, if there's game times that are changed, and just things along those lines, like big events in their life. It's nice when they communicate that. But and being the ones to also prompt a conversation, like to start a conversation, is always nice. And I love it.
Yeah, and to, as you said, treat you as a human being and not like you live and sleep and eat in the on the basketball court.
Yes, it might look like that. No,
Yeah.
I have players and recruits reach out like, how's your niece? How was her play last week? Or, you know, like, how was her birthday party? And I'm like, I'd love that, like, they know that part of my life. So it's nice.
So this is kind of taking a left turn, but I don't know why I thought of it. On your current roster, if you need to take a minute to think, that's fine. But on your current roster, what would you say is the percentage of the student athletes that are there that you reached out to first versus they reached out and made contact with you first?
I'm pretty sure I reached out to all of them first. A lot of them are within programs that we normally recruit from. So I've seen them before prior to being able to reach out to them. So we had a relationship just because they would always see me. A few of them attended like our elite camp, but it was, I'm pretty sure it was because we invited them to come to it. But most of them I reached out to first, I'm pretty sure. I'm trying to think of everyone. Or their coach had reached out to me, but not them personally. Or a few of them were from local programs where their coach was like, you need to watch this player. And I was like, great. So a few of them were definitely from their coaches.
So then how, if I'm a student athlete and I really love the school, like knowing that information, how do I kind of cut through that, or how can I stick out to you in some way, shape, or form? If you
Just reach
don't,
out.
okay.
Yeah, I answer all emails, as many as I can. There's hundreds and hundreds. I really try to answer them all. And sometimes the answer is like, thank you for your schedule. Get me your AAU schedule when you can. Here's when our elite camp is. Please come up to me at elite camp when you are here so I could speak to you. But I really think that I've had some players in the past years email us and say, we're local, we're coming to your basketball game. Can we talk to you after? So that's always helpful. But I think just trying to reach out as much as possible and then also having their coaches reach out, because a lot of times I know the coaches and that always helps. And try to establish some sort of connection in when you're reaching out. So I had a player reach out and say, you know my mom because you played against her. Or I'm like, great, now just say how old I am. Or you have so and so on your team. I played AAU with her sister. Like any sort of connection always helps because then it kind of helps us understand like exactly what we're saying about being diligent in the recruiting process. And then I could just go ask somebody who knows them.
Okay. So yeah, so that's part of your vetting process too, is like, not, I don't know why I just thought of like a background check. You're not doing background checks on people,
No,
but
but pretty much.
but like reaching out to somebody who might know somebody or their coaches, what are the conversations with the AAU coaches or high school coaches that you know? What are those conversations like about student athletes?
It's really just a lot of times, you know, them giving us the background and telling us what the player's capable of, why they speak so highly of them. You know, I always ask, is this a player that you would want to like coach forever? And they're like, yes. Is it a player's co yeah, is it just because they're scoring points? And a lot of times the coaches are like, no, it's not just because of that. Her family is great. She is a 4.0. There's always more to it. So those are kind of what the conversations are like. But it's funny, like it is kind of like a background check, but obviously in the beginning of this, you introduced me, right? And you gave my whole resume, which you probably just pulled up online without having to ask me anything. I can't do
Yeah.
that. And they might the kids that I'm recruiting, I always say kids because I kind of feel like they are still kids. The student athletes that I'm recruiting could literally just pull up anything about me online. And I could rarely do that for them. I do look at social media. I have not contacted some players because of social media, and I have enjoyed some of their social media. So that's another way to do a little background check.
Yeah, what are some things that might turn you off when looking at a student athlete's social media?
Oh boy. Alcohol is always one. If you're drinking in high school, I'm just going to probably tap the brakes on that because it's so accessible in college. I prefer to stay away from that. Honestly, any like negative talking, any trash talking, and self-promotion's great, but not when you're putting down other people. Yeah, I try to stay away from that.
For sure.
And honestly, some wording that's used sometimes that we stay away from or we immediately take somebody off of our list.
Okay. That
Yeah.
makes sense. And this made me think of social media always makes me think of NIL. Is there, do you deal with any of that at your institution?
Thank
Yeah, because
goodness.
it's still, again, it's like, I feel like that's still like the Wild Wild West as well. And
It is.
I try to keep up, but it's constantly changing, and there's no keeping up. It's just trying to figure out
There is none.
as you go, I think.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. I recently got my master's. East Stroudsburg is awesome, and they paid for me to get my master's in sport management, and it was awesome. And one of my projects papers was on NIL, and this was before like it really blew up. And with all my research, and again, it's constantly changing. There's really no rules, I feel like, and that's why it's so hard. You know, like the NCAA put out like basically like a blanket statement, and similar to the transfer portal, like, hey, this is what you can do, and this is how it's going to be done. Good luck, you know? So I'm glad I don't have to deal with that because now there's teams hiring NIL coordinators. There's people on staff now on teams that are literally just dealing with the payment and the NIL deals to players.
Yeah, it'll be
wild.
interesting. The next couple of years, I think, will be interesting to
Oh
see
yeah.
what happens. But yeah,
It's
it's
all gonna change.
it'll
Everything's gonna
be
be very different.
yeah. So when you're like in your season and out of season, I'm sure that the recruiting process looks a little bit different. So where do you put most of your energy in the recruiting process during your season and then outside of your season?
In the season, it's just communicating as much as possible with the recruits that we're talking to or the recruits that we want to talk to, because there's not a ton of time with just myself and my assistant to do everything and go recruit. We try everybody that has signed with us, we make sure we get to a high school game, preferably their senior game. Any underclassmen, we try to get to a high school game. I do like watching our recruits play in high school, because it's totally different than AAU.
Yeah.
It's a totally different basketball player every time. So we try to see that. But the biggest thing that we have to keep up with is like our contact lists, our mail outs, and the order of importance of what we need. So it's really just staying on top of all that and constantly checking our emails and constantly contacting coaches. And then as soon as the season's done, it's like getting on the road for AAU and going crazy kind of to watch as many kids as we can or as many as we need.
Yeah. So I noticed that too. Like AAU and high school are just completely different. Why do you think that is?
I think high school isn't necessarily as structured as AAU. I think high school, a player that I'm recruiting as a post is playing their point guard in high school,
Yeah.
because I think high school
Yeah.
basketball, is just a little type of a different animal. Because, you're going right from, I don't know, your last period class to practice or getting on the bus and going to a game, and whoever's the best player on that high school team is going to be the best player and play every single position. And I think in AAU, you're getting all of the best players on one team. So everybody can kind of play their role more. But it's nice in high school because I feel like it's a little more, I enjoy it. It's a little more carefree. There's a little bit more rivalry. AAU, you're waking up and playing two games against people you've never seen before, so you know nothing about them. High school, it's like your in-town rival, like it's a different atmosphere. And the players we're recruiting are like so hyped for the game. And you get to see them kind of do a little bit of everything most of the time.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about
So different.
it. Yeah, it is just like drastically different, which is kind of funny. But I can totally see like a post player dominating an AAU, and then when they get to their high school team, they're like, well, you have to be the two guard and the point guard
Yes.
and everything. So yeah.
I ask players when they're sitting in my office, what position do you play in high school? Because I love when there's like, coach, what position? This is usually a parent question.
Yeah.
What position do you see my daughter playing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what position does your daughter play? And they'll be like, point guard. I'm like, perfect.
Yeah.
I would love that, but I always say, well, what do you play in high school? And there's always like a laugh. And it's like, oh, I kind of do everything in high school. And I'm like, exactly. And you probably won't have to do everything here, but unless you're like a swing player, but a lot of the time I ask them, what do you play in high school? And they're like, I play like a 3-4. And what do you play in AAU? I play a 2.
Yeah.
Why do you play the 3-4 in high school? Because I'm the tallest one on the team. I'm like, okay. So that tends to be the conversation a lot.
Is there, or I guess, what is to you, what is the most challenging part of the recruiting process?
The most challenging part of the recruiting process is honestly everything. No, I think everything. It's just tough in general, I think. We try to make it as easy as possible. I think the most toughest part is knowing that you're asking a 17-year-old student athlete to make a decision potentially for the next 4 years, and it's usually weighs on them a lot. And I think it's so tough on our end, because I'm always like, it's okay if you don't want to come here. Ultimately, this is a business, and I have to be okay with you not coming here. And having that conversation with them, I think, is always tough. And making sure like they know like it's okay to tell another coach no because they want to come to you, or vice versa. I think that's like really, really tough. I hate it.
Yeah,
So I always like feel bad.
because it's like the biggest decision, arguably the biggest decision they've made to that point in their life.
Ever.
And
Yes.
it's like, it is. And another coach said, like, it's not a 4-year decision, it's a 40-year decision, right? Because it's like setting
Yes.
you up for the rest of your life, arguably. And so it is a lot. And I don't know. This is one thing that I struggle with, or I try to think about, is like, how do you make that easier for them? Like, how can you help them set themselves up in all ways when they're like 17 or 18? It's just like insane to me to
It's so
think
tough.
about.
I tell them while they're sitting in my office, I'm like, listen, make a pros and cons list. I'm not going to sit here and ask who else you're looking at because I would never badmouth another coach or another school. It's everybody's different, right? Like, I don't need to know where else you're looking. If you want to tell me, great, but I don't need to know that. I'm not going to try to like beat them. Like, if you want to come here, you're going to want to come here. I'm not going to tell you why we're better. You should be able to figure that out on your own by just being here. So we tell them to old school, but we tell them to do a pros and cons list. I'm like, please do a pros and cons list with everything, every school. And I also tell them, I'm trying to tell you why you would be a perfect fit here, but you need to figure out why this would be a perfect fit for you. So we always try to ask them to do that on their own. So it's the same thing with the job, like why I thought I was a perfect fit for East Stroudsburg and why I thought East Stroudsburg was a perfect fit for me. Because not everything's going to be the perfect fit for you. So we try to tell them outside of their pros and cons to see why it's a good school for them and why, they're good for the school type of thing. And I wholeheartedly believe, and I tell everybody this, when you walk out my office and you walk down the steps, you know if you're coming to play here or not. There's no doubt. If after you do your visit, like when you walk out of a place, if that's the one, even if you have five more visits, you know that feeling as soon as you leave the campus. Because at 17 years old, it's not something that's going to linger on your mind that long if you love it and that's where you want to be. I truly think that.
Yeah, and we would always say, if you love this school, you're gonna love it regardless of how many visits you do. So it's like, do all your visits, do everything you need to do, because that same thing as you said, and it's like, how did you feel leaving campus? Did you feel like it was a right fit? Regardless of basketball, would you want to go here? To the
That's the biggest
school
thing we ask.
thing. Yeah, everything like that is just like all the way around. Is that a good fit? So it sounds like you don't really pressure the kids for an answer. What does your timeline look like from offer to when they might accept?
So I know a lot of people disagree with this. I don't really give a timeline. I don't really deadline them. I've done that before. I've done that at the higher levels when we've had to. But I think at this level, and with not giving a full scholarship, and with kind of everything going on in their life and in the world, the last thing they need is the pressure to make a lifelong decision. Ultimately, we tell them, I always ask, do you want to sign early or not? And if you do want to sign early, what is your timeline? And 99% of the time, they give me their own timeline, and I'm like, great. And then it always works out. Unless very rare occasion where somebody's like, I don't want to sign. It's usually like a, if I'm talking to a transfer, like, I just want to wait it out. That's the only time I'd be like, okay, but you know what? I need to know what's going on because we're still in need of this position or, this exact thing that you would bring to us. But very rarely do I give somebody a deadline. But back to quickly what you said, the other thing post-COVID we now tell everybody is, would you come here if basketball got canceled? If this is a school that if basketball didn't exist, would you come here? And I think that that helps a lot of people's decisions as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to frame it too, because it's like something that has actually happened, so they can
Yeah,
actually
it
put
happened.
themselves into that spot of thinking, oh my gosh, and remember kind of what that looked like for them. So when you said that you had to put timelines on people, what did you mean by that at other levels?
So sometimes, there's somebody that went in the transfer portal and it's beginning of the summer and we're trying to get everything ready for September. You can't tell me in September that you're coming here type of thing. We're getting our summer workouts done. We're doing it. Our team's getting together over the summer, whatever it is. And it's more along the lines of because I'll get the feeling that they're just waiting for a better offer and it's not about the school. So that's usually when I deadline it. Because if they tell me, like, I'm waiting to see who else comes, like, okay, then this isn't going to be it.
Like you don't want to be somebody's second choice. You want
Correct.
somebody to like want to be there, want to have what you all are offering. So that makes complete sense. So the transition to college or from high school to college can be stressful. What are some proactive strategies you recommend for athletes to excel academically and athletically in their first year, first semester?
I feel bad for every freshman, and I tell them, I'm so sorry that you have to go through freshman year. I tell them the first 2 weeks you're going to cry, and not because of basketball. You're going to cry because you're not home and because it's overwhelming, and you're going to get lost going to class, and you're going to miss the hours in the cafeteria, and you're not going to have the right book. It's going to be a lot, and we're going to try to help you with that. But once you get through those first 2 weeks, you're going to be great. I think understanding the balance of everything is huge, along with understanding the commitment to being a student athlete is probably one of the hardest things, and something that we try to encourage and stress. And then I think what we try to tell everybody prior to their freshman year is to start as early as possible. Don't just roll up in September, like I'm here, you know, like that's not going to work, whether it's working out or get a summer job so you know what it's like to get up early, get a job, still have to come home and work out, start doing your laundry, things like that ahead of time. I think, you know, start as early as possible to try to mimic what your life might be like.
From it sounds like from a 360 degree angle too, not just like basketball getting in shape, but just like you're about to be independent. Nobody's doing your laundry. People are still, I guess, technically cooking for you, but you have to be at those places where you need to be. So I think that's really good advice.
Yeah,
And
wake
if
up to an
you
alarm, not your mom. Things like that.
So it sounds like those, because I was just going to ask, like, what are your expectations of student athletes like that summer before the first year? But it sounds like that is the expectation, or is there anything you would add to it?
No, I also tell them don't play AAU that last year coming in. I don't really, you know, take off of basketball. Like you have just had the craziest 4 years of AAU in high school, and you're graduating high school, which is a huge accomplishment, right? So we're like, I'm like, they always ask, give me this, give me the workout. I'm like, no, I'm gonna wait. And I always wait to give it to them way later, because I don't want them to burn themselves out. They just had a break, you know, they deserve it. But we really tell them, you know, just start balancing things and get, like I said, get a summer job, know what it's like to work and be dependent on yourself. It's a lot.
It is a lot, and it
Like we're gonna
can.
get you in shape, right? Like ultimately,
Yes.
that's my job.
Don't worry about that.
I'm gonna get you in shape,
I will
but you gotta come
say
in shape.
that the year you coached me, I was in the best
Oh
shape of my
boy,
life. I will say that.
that's good. That's good and bad. You know, it's funny. Like it's that was like my first head coaching job. Like we don't even like do sprints anymore. I like feel bad for you guys. Like
That
I'm like.
is insane. That's unbelievable for me to think
Like
about.
it's rare. I mean, it's rare. It's also wear and tear on bodies have changed completely because AAU and everything. Like I feel like your bodies the 15 years ago, the 13 years ago that I coached you guys were so different than what we have now also. But you know, we're gonna get you in shape. But I had a senior, a transfer senior last year, fifth year, tell me, and she played for me forever. Transferred in. And she goes, every year, man, I think I'm in shape day one of preseason. I'm not. Every year, I think I'm ready for you. Every year. And she's like, and it's not because of the workouts, it's because of basketball shape is so different than running on a track. But I was laughing because she was arguably one of our, you know, better players and great kid. And she's coaching now. She's great. And she's always like, man, I thought this was going to be the year. Like, and nope. Still very sore. I am still very tired. And I'm like, yeah, there's really not much you could do.
Yeah, that's true. I think that was the year that I really learned how to run. It was like
Yeah.
not to think about anything, just run the sprint. So I can't believe that you don't make them really run sprints anymore, because that
It
was a lot.
was a lot. We were so good though that year. So, you know. We had
But
a really good group.
we did. It was a lot of fun. I actually just interviewed five kids that I had coached, and they recently graduated, and I asked them the question, like, how can you prepare? And they kind of said exactly what you just said. It's
That's
just
so
like
funny.
there's nothing you really can do to prepare, because you don't know how sore you're actually going to be. Like, you don't know what your body's going to feel like. There's no way to mimic that outside. And so, like, the conclusion that we came up with was just to prepare is like you have to be ready to be flexible. Like, you just have to be able to roll with it and just do what you need to do and just be able to adapt. And that was like the biggest thing was just like adaptability.
It's huge. And know that you're going to be sore in places you didn't know existed. Like I had freshmen are like, there's something and I don't know where this, but it hurts and it's really sore and I don't know what this is. I'm like, go to the trainer. And then they're like, it was my lower back. I'm like, okay. Like it's literally like, they're like, my back was never sore, you know? Like I had a play, I had players like, my ankles are sore. My shoulder is sore. I'm like, I know all the shooting workouts. So it's so funny. But yeah, there's just be ready and just embrace it and rely on your upperclassmen. Rely on the upperclassmen because they did it. They went through it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, just embrace it and just kind of give in. Just give in to the process and understand that it's going to be okay. You'll be able to like walk upstairs without feeling every muscle in your legs at some point in your life.
I love when the freshmen are like, yeah, I just sat on the steps. I didn't even make it up. Or I see them on the elevator going one floor. I'm like, are we kidding? And they're like, coach, I'm not making it up those steps today. I'm like, all because of lift? They're like, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So we I think that's all I have, and we're like kind of coming towards the end, and I do appreciate your time. So I'm gonna ask a couple questions that I ask everybody. What book or podcast would you recommend every incoming first year read before their first season, and why? Or if it's not a book, a podcast or something. Oh, I did say
I love
podcast, but
podcasts. I do love podcasts. Not really all sports related ones, so I wouldn't suggest any of mine. Honestly, anything John Gordon. We love the energy bus on our team. We do a book club every year. Did I do a book club with you guys?
No. It was like your
I probably,
first it was like your first year, and I think you
I
came in
think a
like
year after you.
summer
Yes.
into that year. So it was like kind of it was really quick.
Okay. It was. I still can't believe that happened so quick. It was July. It was end of July, I remember. The Energy Bus is huge. I think reading the Energy Bus, it's a super easy read and it's about positive energy and not letting negative energy in your life. And if it is in your life, how to channel it, how to change it, and how to also adapt to like a really bad day and how to adapt to people in your life that might be negative and you can't just quit. And when things are not going your way, how to try to look to the positive side of things. So I definitely suggest that. I have a million copies in my office. I give it to everybody to read. We've done it as a team before. I've done it twice in at East Stroudsburg as a team just because they asked to do it again. And we did a few, but also the positive dog. All my players love dogs. Everybody does. So the positive dog was another John Gordon one. Again, about being positive when everything kind of stinks and nothing's going your way and everything's gloom and doom, about trying to find the positive. So anything I think along those lines, because you're gonna be in some not positive situations all the time and you're not gonna have everybody there to like pick you up. So I think those two books definitely.
Yeah, the Energy Bus I've heard of. I haven't read it, so I think I need to look into it because it sounds like a
It's
really good
great.
one.
Yeah.
And all right, so the next one, what is something about the recruiting process or transition to college you believe that other coaches would disagree with?
That, oh my gosh, that they would disagree with. That it used to be, it was the same across the board recruiting. I think, you know, everybody was at the same events, we were all at the same games. And now I think it's changed drastically on different levels because of money, because of what people can offer. But ultimately, I think the biggest thing people would disagree with, that the thing that we are recruiting still the same, is that it's still a business. At the end of the day, regardless if I'm giving money or not, or NIL or not, it's a business. And I don't know if everybody would agree with that. And I hate to say it, and it makes me sick when to think of it that way, but it is. If somebody's not coming to we check out next person on the list. We have to do that. And if somebody tells me no, I always ask them why. Next person. And I think putting it in those terms, I think some people would agree with because of how much we love it and how close we are with our players, but it's a business.
Because at the end of the day, if you don't perform, you lose
Fired.
your job. Right. So
Correct.
it's
It's a
like
business.
it is, it
And
is.
I've been through that.
At the core of it is a business, and you can make relationships and you can get close to people, but at the end of the day, it is if you don't perform, it doesn't matter. For I'm
Right.
talking about you as in a coach, not necessarily a student
Yes.
athlete, but yeah.
And I've had one of the best coaches in the country say to me, I went and played against them. We had like a little bit of a guarantee game. Talking to her before the game, and I'm like, "You guys are doing great." And she's like, "Yeah, we'll see if my key still works tomorrow." And I was like, "Yes." Like it's so
Yeah.
like I still think of that moment. I'm like, "You're the greatest coach ever." Like I can't believe
Yeah.
you say that. And it's true. It's a business. Like, and you never know what can factor into it at any level. And I think that we have to still remember that, yeah, recruiting is fun and all this, but it's a business.
Yeah, for sure. And especially now, I think with NIL and everything, it's like that adds another weight of business on top of
It
it.
does. And that's, I don't know how coaches manage that. Like
Yeah,
I struggle with like, did we give them their meal money today? It's like $10. I'm like, I can't imagine. And then I laugh. I'm like, man, could I have made money when I played? Like that would have been great.
yeah. All right, last but not least, any final words of wisdom?
For recruits, just be confident in what you're doing and know that feelings aren't going to get hurt. It's okay. If you want to go somewhere, it's okay. If you don't want to go somewhere, but like I said earlier, you'll know when you walk out the door or when you end a conversation, you'll know literally like in your heart, in your gut, you're gonna know if that's the place for you.
All right. Coach Steph, I appreciate your time and you being here. Thank you so much.
Of course.
If you want to keep up with the East Stroudsburg women's basketball team, you can follow them on Instagram or X at ESU underscore WBB. I'll put the Instagram and X links in the show notes. Also in the show notes, I'm going to put the link to the East Stroudsburg women's basketball camps and to their recruiting questionnaire. Thank you so much for listening. If you're looking for more specific recruiting advice based on your situation, head over to hoopsthroughlife.com today to schedule your free 30-minute strategy session with me. We will discuss where you currently are in the recruiting process, where you want to go, and create a plan to get you there. Again, that's hoopsthroughlife.com, HOOPSTHROUGHLIFE.COM. And if you have any questions for me or questions you want me to ask future guests, you can email me at l@hoopsthroughlife.com. That's el@hoopsthroughlife.com. I look forward to hearing from you soon.